Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of Defining Truth. Today we're going to talk about major news around the world and domestically. Joe Biden, his condition, his big boy press conference, and what's going on in French elections, and got a lot to talk about. All right. Well, hey guys, I know it's been a little bit. If you didn't get a chance, you can go back and check out our special debate coverage. It's only about 10 minutes. It's up on YouTube now. Some of the clips from that are on Instagram, but it's pretty good. We went over the Trump-Biden debate and the immediate aftermath, which set the world on fire, at least here in the United States. And that's available on YouTube. Like I said, it's about 10 minutes. So go check that out. Now, since then, Biden had an interview with George Stephanopoulos, which was almost as bad as the Biden-Trump debate. And by bad, I mean as far as his cognitive decline. And since then now, yesterday, and we're recording this July 12th, it's about 2:40 p.m. Yesterday, he had what the White House deemed his big boy press conference. I don't know who thought to say that. Of course, the world went nuts with that title. Of his fellow Democrats since that briefing yesterday have come forward and said that he needs to step down. In fact, probably the biggest piece of news in that regard is the super PAC. Let me get the name right here. That just came out this morning and said they are going to withhold $90 million in pledged donation money, funds, unless Biden steps down. That coming from the largest super PAC, Democratic super PAC. So I think the White House is panicking. Anyways, we'll get into that in a minute. Brandon Jones is back from his travels and adventures with us today. Brandon, welcome home.
Thank you. Good to be back.
Yeah. So Brandon, I know you did some research into the French thing. You can help me understand because before we were doing just some research into how French elections work in parliament and et cetera. It's very confusing from a outside perspective if you're not French, but I think we got kind of an idea of what happened. And if you're wondering why we're talking about France, you could probably just Google France and you'll see images of the streets on fire and riots and officers being attacked. And this is all in celebration of the far left extremist who just won the majority seats in parliament, but apparently they didn't win enough to control parliament. So parliament is hung, and we'll get into that in a minute. But let's start out with Biden. And if you didn't catch our special recap, let's just go over real quick. Brandon, you watched the debate, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Let's go over that just real quick. I mean, some highlights or whatever. I didn't prep anything for this, but Biden, for whatever insane reason, agreed to debate Trump very early, by the way. It was unprecedented, right?
Yeah, I was going to say, not only did he agree to debate him, but it was very early. And I think that somebody must have thought it was going to be a good idea. I don't know why.
It was not.
I don't know why you, unless, you know, usually you do things early because it's going to work out in your favor. Otherwise, you try to hold off until the last minute. So somebody in Biden's camp must have thought that this was going to be a good idea. But he performed badly, but it was because he had a cold. So we all understand. And we'll be looking forward to the next
one. Yeah, so if you didn't know, the White House, immediately after this terrible debate, Biden was just mumbling and really having a difficult time cognitively. The White House comes out and says, oh, he had a cold. Presumably telling people that he was on cold medicine. That's the assumption, right? And then, unfortunately, in a press interview, LePierre, what's her name? The White House spokeslady. She goes, oh, he's not on any cold medicine. And then one of the members of the press goes, well, what kind of medicine is he on then? Because, you know, they implied that. And she's like, oh, I'm not at the liberty to tell you what kind of medicine he's on.
Yeah, it was Peter Ducey, I think, from Fox News that asked in a follow-up to the debate. He said, well, so what kind of cold medicine is the president on? And she responded back, he's not on any cold medicine. Proving, like you just said, that
jeez,
he didn't actually have a cold. He performed poorly, And I really liked the debate setup that they did this time, the rules that they imposed, no audience. And, you know, they cut people's mics off as well. So you didn't get the sort of the back and forth, which I think Trump falls into or has in the past where, you know, he cuts people off and things like that. I think that that was probably something that was great for Trump's team because they knew that Biden would be able to dig himself into a hole without Trump being Trump.
Sure, they were able to make every single solitary person eligible for what I've been able to do with the with the COVID, excuse me, with dealing with everything we have to do with. Look, if we finally beat Medicare.
Made Trump look really good because there was a couple parts in that debate where Biden is just going off on these wild rants and very offensive. Like he's like, you know, snarling at him. And Trump just kind of stands there and doesn't say anything.
Yeah, he couldn't.
I mean, you're right. He just let him dig a hole. Yeah. So, I mean, very strange. There was one sort of key moment during that debate where Biden just completely froze. And he said something about we beat Medicare, like we defeated Medicare or something. It didn't make any sense. He lost train of thought.
And that's the one time where I thought that the moderators kind of saved him because they very quickly, they did an okay job of not jumping in and not interjecting. But that time he lost his train of thought and it wasn't coming back. And the one moderator, I forget his name, jumped in and kind of moved on to the next question as to
there was no follow up. So, I mean, he could rant or mumble anything he wanted, and they were just like, thank you, and now over to Donald Trump. Yeah, I mean, I guess that affects both sides as far as follow-up questions. I heard a lot on the left actually mad about that because they were like, why didn't you follow up and ask Trump what he meant? And I'm like, well, they didn't do it to either person. They just let the candidates speak. Yeah, one of the most awkward parts was when Biden started talking about his golf game and challenged Trump to play and then said, he's not 6'3" or whatever he said. It was so weird. Oh, man.
Yeah, I thought that that was actually one of the better parts of the debate. For comedy's sake, yeah. I mean, there's no way that that Joe Biden is a 6 handicap. People in the golf world will know that that's you're playing some pretty good golf if you're golfing at a 6 handicap. And he said it as like, well, when I was vice president, I played my best golf. I was a 6 handicap. And it's like, well, that's because you weren't doing anything else as vice president. Like, that's not a very good talking point. You know, maybe like the 4 years after I was vice president, before I became president, I got really good at golf. But like, so basically you did nothing but golf for this country. I mean, jeez. I guess that's better than what he's doing now.
Yeah. Well, and since then, days later, Trump has now challenged him to a golf match. And he said it was going to be the hugest, the greatest, the best, most watched match ever in the history of golf.
The history of sports.
Yeah. He said it was, he said probably bigger than the Masters or something. It was really funny. I thought on a serious note, one of the worst part, and I thought, man, the gall to say this, is Biden actually brought up the withdrawal of Afghanistan as if it was a good thing. And simultaneously said that he was the only president to have no Americans die under his watch. Of course, completely glossing over the fact that our Marines died there at Abbey Gate in that disastrous and what I would call treasonous withdrawal from Afghanistan. It was a disgrace. And I just really wonder, like, what in the world is going on in the administration, right, on the Biden team? Like, does he really just say whatever he wants or comes into his head? I mean, we see that he has cards. It's very scripted. We'll go into that in a second in his big boy conference. I can't believe they called it that. But he's got cards and he's reading, right? Very detailed. But like, whoever told him to bring up Afghanistan, I mean, that's really, really bad PR. The fallout from that, as we've discussed before, has been horrifying. I mean, $86 billion worth of equipment to our enemies. We handed the country over to the Taliban. I mean, think about how terrible this is. An entire generation, 20 years. So kids that were born while the Americans were there grew up in a country where the ideals of democracy were furthered. There was freedom. Girls had equal rights, could go to school, could learn. Now you're 20 years old, and the far left Democrats in America decide to hand you back to the terrorist. I mean, it's evil, you know, and it goes way beyond that into what we handed over to, you know, our opponents globally, like the Chinese who were there immediately to look into stuff, and the Russians who never left their embassy. It was a true, like, get on the hop helicopters out of Vietnam moment for Biden. And yet he's so out of it that he still brings it up like it's like some kind of talking point.
Yeah, if he's stuck in 2008 like it's the campaign trail with Obama. We're going to get the troops out of Afghanistan. Dude, it's like
if I was in the White House, I'd be like, don't talk about that anymore. Like, you're going to end up going to jail over that. It was horrifying.
Well, he also said equally as bad with a lot less repercussions, obviously. He also stated that the Border Patrol agents love him and endorsed him.
Oh, man, I forgot about that.
And then their union tweeted, "We have not and never will endorse Joe Biden for
lifetime.
President. Yeah.
I was covering the debate on X, right? And I was sending out, I still want to call them tweets because it makes sense. But what do you call them on X now? X's?
I think messages. It's still tweets.
And I remember when he said that in live time, I mean, within minutes. So to be clear for listeners here, he said that the Border Patrol had fully endorsed him for president. And within minutes, the Border Patrol union reps tweeted, "To be clear, we never have and never will endorse you for president." Oh, man. It's so embarrassing. Okay, so if you haven't seen it, you go back and watch it on YouTube or wherever you can find it. It's worth a watch. I mean, this is your country. I think you should know the guy who has the nuclear buttons and how he's acting. So a couple days later, he goes on George Stephanopoulos's interview. And like I said, it's almost as bad as the debate.
Part of the other concern is that this seems to have fit into a pattern of decline that has been reported on recently. New York Times had a headline on July 2nd, "Biden's lapses are said to be increasingly common and worrisome." Here's what they wrote. "People who have spent time with President Biden over the last few months or so said the lapses appear to have grown more frequent, more pronounced, and after Thursday's debate, more worrisome. By many accounts, as evidenced by video footage, observation, and interviews, Mr. Biden is not the same today as he was even when he took office 3.5 years ago." Similar reporting in the Washington Post and the Wall Street Journal. Are you the same man today that you were when you took office 3.5 years ago?
In terms of successes, yes.
Now, there was a true opportunity for George to do some follow-up, which he did not. Biden gave him ridiculous answers. You know, he would ask him, I'll give him credit for asking straightforward questions, but then with a lack of response, he was just like, okay, moving on, right? A couple times he asked him, like, you know, you obviously have declined, or, you know, people are saying that you're not capable. Look at the debate. He pointed examples. And Biden would just sort of be like, what are you talking about? Never happened. You know, he whisper scares people. And then instead of challenging that, Stephanopoulos just kind of was like, okay, moving on to the next question. So I didn't appreciate that part, but he did enough damage himself in that interview. It was pretty bad. And then, as sort of proof in the pudding that it was really bad, the White House tells the world that he's going to do this big boy conference. I don't know why. We'll have to figure out who said that first. But henceforth, I mean, it was like hashtag big boy conference trending on social media. That's just what it was called, right? So first, the big boy conference starts with him meeting President Zelensky. And they're talking about Ukraine and Russia. And here's where it starts to go downhill. All right. He's introducing, I'm going to try not to laugh when I say this. He's introducing President Zelensky. And he's talking about how great of a person he is and what a great leader he is. And then he says, and here is President. And when he introduces President Zelensky, he says, and here is President Putin.
"And now I want to hand it over to the president of Ukraine, who has as much courage as he has determination. Ladies and gentlemen, President Putin."
And nobody like bats an eye. Like, they just, you know, Zelensky walks out. I mean, what's Zelensky going to say?
Yeah, he wants his billions of dollars. So he's like, great, call me Putin all day long.
Oh, my gosh. So, okay, so that ends, and they talk about international stuff and geopolitics, and then it goes into his big boy press briefing where it's just him and it's reporters. Now, the first thing I noticed, he's working off a script. He had a list. He had cards with each reporter that he was going to call on, their name and who they were with. And he was supposed to stick to that order, which he did for the most part. And then at the very beginning of that, someone asked something about, well, of course, they're all asking about, is he going to step down and his cognitive decline that's so apparent and, you know, et cetera. And somehow Kamala Harris came up and they asked about his confidence in her ability to be the president or something to that effect. And in his number two, swing and a miss, he said that he had full confidence that his Vice President Trump could be president or else he would not have chosen her. Oh, gosh. I was watching when he said that, and I'm like, did he really just say that? And then, of course, you know, online just blows up about him calling his Vice President Trump. The fact checkers, as we were, you know, Brandon and I were talking before the show, fact checkers online are quick to cover up, you know, like slobbering to cover up everything. Oh, one fact checker report I read, because they posted something of him saying something, you know, fumbling his words, and they were like, oh, Biden has struggled his whole life with a stutter. And I was like, really? That's what you're going to do, Meta, big tech? You're going to slap misinformation things when we get on you about his obvious decline and you have things like that to say, like he has a stutter? It's pitiful. Anyways, so his press conference sort of devolved into just him batting away questions about his mental decline. That's what everybody wanted to know. They kept asking him, and it just got redundant at a certain point. He had a couple like fade off moments where he starts mumbling and nobody understands what he said. At the very end, a reporter stood up and then repeats the gaffe that he had at the beginning. I don't know who the reporter is, but he stands up and he's like, Mr. President, Donald Trump is mocking you online right now for saying that you called him your vice president. What would you say to him or something like that? And he goes, this is what Biden said. Listen to him. And then he walks off stage. Listen to him?
He always has these sort of weird like comebacks. Like we were talking earlier when the whole thing with the money in China was coming out. He kind of turns back to the mic and he goes, show me the money. And it's like, you're just, I don't know. I really feel bad for the guy because, I mean, he's been in Washington a long time. And he couldn't give it up. And now they're not going to give it up for him because you have all of these staffers in D.C. that they're basically running the show. I mean, I was listening to one podcast where they were talking like, why would these people remove Biden? You would basically be firing yourself. And so I'm interested to see where we go forward. You know, do they sort of placate Kamala, who they put away in a closet, and allow her to be president for 4 months while they pick somebody else at their convention? I mean, at this point, there's got to be great odds in Vegas right now for which one comes first. Does Trump pick his VP first, or does Biden get replaced first? Like, which one's going to happen first? Because I thought by now both have happened, neither of which have.
Well, I mean, Biden, I'm pretty sure, based on his statements just this week, is sticking with Kamala Harris. I mean, so if you look at the pattern of what happened, it helps you understand what they'll do next. So his decline, his mental decline, has been occurring over the last couple of years, right? And anyone paying attention has been seeing this and calling it out. And what we've observed is this sort of mass propaganda, like 1984-style cover-up, where the mainstream media is involved, the administration's involved, probably most disgustingly, his family members are involved. And they're all trying to say, oh, it's just right-wing conspiracy. You're lying. He's totally fine. All the while, those people, those liars, are watching, you know, the doctor, the Alzheimer's doctor, or the, what was it, Parkinson's doctor, seven visits.
A world-renowned Parkinson's doctor has visited the White House seven times. Like the last 6 months.
But then you'll go out on a podium and tell everybody, every American citizen that's concerned about this very serious situation, he's the leader of the free world, and everyone's watching him sort of decline into dementia, and you lie to them. So that's been happening for a while, and that's important to understand because it gives you perspective into how they're reacting now, right, as the world is on fire. And then, you know, you have the mainstream media that covered as much as the administration did. They lied about his status. You know, they say it's all misinformation, and they censor and they shadow ban. So what do they do now? That's the question. Because what this early debate with Trump did is it just ripped the blanket off of this whole charade. And now the whole world knows he obviously has dementia, right? He's declining very rapidly. He's not the same person he was even 6 months ago. His face looks different. He can't speak correctly. He can't walk properly. We know now, because of all these releases, that he, you know, goes to bed by 4 p.m. and he's done, or, you know, the time frames they establish for him. So it's like, now what do? They're panicking. And as we mentioned, you have, I think they're up to 12 now members of elected officials, Democrats, who are calling for him to step down. Then you have this largest Democrat super PAC who's saying, nope, we're holding on to this $90 million until we figure out who's actually going to be president, because it ain't going to be Joe Biden. And then you have Joe, he gets out there and he's like, I'm not leaving, you know, I don't know. And then you have the Kamala Harris issue, which is a big issue because she's a DEI hire, and that's like not even disputable, right? Joe Biden himself, in the wake of all of the George Floyd nonsense, was like, I'm going to pick a black woman. When he said that, and I just listened to a bunch of analysts talk about it this week, when he said that, he eliminated a huge swath of potentially qualified candidates, because if you weren't black and you weren't a woman, you couldn't be his vice president. He kind of locked himself into that. So here comes Kamala Harris, a notorious liar. Her own father said, I don't trust her. She's a liar. That's really bad. And she's, you know, she has this cyclical way of talking, you know. I like school buses because buses are nice and I like them. And when they're nice, they're good to like because you can ride in them, and that's why I like school buses. Typical sentence, right? And she does it with a whole bunch of them. You can see them online. She's grossly incompetent for that role. But here's the problem when your far left woke mind virus has taken over. They cannot get rid of her. There is a coalition amongst the left. They will not remove a black woman from the ticket. They're not going to do it. So now they're panicking, because you have people who maybe won't admit it publicly, but behind closed doors, they're like, we need a real president, and it can't, and we got to get rid of Kamala Harris.
No, I mean, they have,
but they don't know what
somebody
to do.
They have to find somebody to beat Trump, and she's not it. But like you said, they're stuck with her. So, you know, it doesn't matter who the vice president is. You move her to the top of the ticket, that's what everybody's going to see. You could have the best candidate behind her at vice president. Nobody cares, because she'll be at the top. I don't know. It's going
to
be interesting.
Well, there's, and this has all led to this sort of civil war in the left, left-wing parties amongst themselves. They're all fighting now. They're panicking. It's like, first the challenge was who could be the wokest, right? Who could lie the most and race bait the most and completely deceive the American people? And remember, just to be clear for those listening who sometimes get a little edgy because we talk about politics, you know, as Christians, it's important to realize where this ideology is coming from. The left-wing ideology is one that is foundationally atheist. They reject the existence of the God of the Bible. And if you understand that from the beginning, everything else they do makes sense. The lying, the greater good aspect, the actions that they take, etc. So now they're eating each other, because they all scrambled to the top of Woke Mountain, and now the mountain's falling down. Or actually, it ended up being a volcano. It's erupting. And lava's knocking off candidates all over the place. They don't know what to do, right? So it will be very interesting. I'm very hesitant to make any predictions, because I you know, I'll admit, I don't know what's going to happen this fall. I know it's going to be chaos, but what America needs is the church in America to pray for this country, for its leaders. You know, Biden's there now. We should pray for him. We should pray that the Lord would, you know, give him common sense and he would step down. That's a good prayer for him. And we should pray for the other leaders in our nation, because this is a lot of chaos and turmoil amidst, as we'll go into a minute, a lot of other chaotic things going around the world. So more to come on Biden. I'm sure it's almost a daily thing at this point. Lastly, the convention, Republican RNC convention, is coming up in Milwaukee starting Sunday afternoon.
Monday.
Monday. And we're still waiting for a Trump VP pick. I'm utterly shocked that we have not heard that yet, but somebody knows, I'm sure. Maybe not. Maybe Trump's just kept it, you know, close to his pocket.
Well, hopefully like, Trump knows at this point.
It's going to be the hugest, best announcement ever made.
The biggest vice president ever. Not as good as me, Donald Trump, but close. Close second. Anyways. All right.
I miss hearing Trump's voice. It's just hilarious. You know, even if it doesn't make sense sometimes, it's like, remember somebody just showed me that clip the other day of the comedian who's was saying how he loved how Trump announced when we got Baghdadi.
Yeah, yeah.
So funny. And he's like, what did he say? He's like, we got him. He died like a dog. Oh, man. Yeah. All right. Well, sometimes you got to align yourself, you know, with the greater good. And what's occurring right now is as we're going to discuss in Europe, is a very dark, extreme left-wing movement that's bent on, really, let's call it what it is. They're bent on destroying Western civilization in the West, and they're doing anything to get there. And that includes, by the way, the destruction of the church and the influence of Christian Judaic values, which is why it should matter to everyone in America. Anyways, okay, let's go on to France. Now, France just had a surprise parliamentary election. The president, Macron, orchestrates this major deception in French parliamentary elections, leading to a sudden shift in election results within days. Things looked wonderful for common-sense conservative French citizens who have increasingly turned to Marine Le Pen, the leader of the Conservative National Rally Party, for help amidst the terrible economical and security-related problems plaguing the entire country. This, combined with European elections, showing a rise in support for conservative common-sense candidates, sent the left-wing extremists into a frenzy. They just had to do something about it. So Macron, the French president, decided to call a snap parliamentary election 3 years earlier than scheduled. Brandon, so just to clarify, because this took us a while to figure out. So what do they mean by 3 years earlier than scheduled? This is parliamentary elections every 5 years?
Yeah, so France has a similar system to the United Kingdom. People vote for a parliament, but the president, or well, I should say the prime minister in England's case, and the president, it seems like in France's case, has the power to call elections early based off where they feel the tide is. And so the European Parliament, or the European Union, who also has a parliament for country member countries, just had an election. And so there was sort of a what they're calling a right-wing surge that's upending some national politics across Europe. The reason it appears that Macron called an early election is because he saw what happened in the European Parliament, this right-wing surge, was worried that that was going to happen in France, which it seemed like the trend was that was going to be the way that it went.
Right.
And he decided to call the election early as opposed to waiting 5 years or, you know, another 3 years for that to play out. It sounds like right-wing parties across the continent being Europe, had strong showings. And instead, liberal and green groups lost seats in the European Parliament, and it's upending some domestic politics within.
So Macron got scared. He sees the rise of common sense conservatives around Europe, and he's like, "Oh no, I got to do something." The fact that he can do that—I mean, that's their system, whatever. But that's crazy. It's so corrupt. It reminds me, like we were talking about before the show, how the Democrats do things here in the U.S., where to sort of avoid being labeled a cheater, what they do is they pass laws or rules that enable them to do certain nefarious things. And then when you're like, hey, you cheated, they're like, no, there's a law that says I can. And you're like, yeah, your supermajority made the law that let you cheat, you know?
Yeah, to be fair and to play devil's advocate, Israel has a similar system where Netanyahu was calling elections left and right, then he lost, then they were calling elections and he won.
Yeah, it's insane.
So it's a different system. It's a little chaotic, but You know, there's a lot of people that argue that the two-party system in America is bad, and now you have countries like France that have, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 parties. So it depends. There's positives and negatives to each system, I think.
Well, specifically, this is a great example of how it can be abused.
Correct.
At least, is that if you don't like the way your opposition party is going, the fact that you can step in and call a snap election is insane. And so his gamble only partly paid off. So what's interesting is that, Emmanuel Macron, he's the French president, considered by many French citizens to be kind of out of touch with reality and the condition of the French people. He wasn't super popular anymore as it is, but he got scared. And so he comes up with this scheme to rival the best of villainous plans from a movie or something. He joins forces with the far-left extremist party, the New Popular Front, the NFP, and he convinces over 200 candidates to simply drop out, allowing the extreme left-wing parties to swoop in and claim those seats. So, in the first days of this snap election, it looks like the Conservative National Rally Party under Marine Le Pen is winning. They take more seats than they ever have before in their party's history. And Macron panics again because it looks like what he's trying to do backfires. So what does he do? He gets together with the, like I said, when I say extremist far left party, I mean, that's an understatement. Like these are communist socialist mixed with jihadist. It's not a good group of people here in France in the New Popular Front. Macron basically sells his country out, joins forces with them, and convinces over 200 candidates to just bow out. Now, I don't know the details of that, other than that's what has been reported in all over the news, but it would appear that the 200 people he convinced to bow out would have been more centrist people. His gamble was that leftist groups could come in and take those seats instead of fighting for them. And that at least paid off, because within a day, everything had flipped over on its head. It looked like the conservatives were going to finally take back France and do some common sense changes. And then the next day, the leftists are in control. Now, when I say he sold his country out, because what he did to accomplish that is he put this extreme far left party. Now they have the highest amount of seats in parliament. They're the dominant party. Now, not enough, as we read, there is a, 285? How many seats required to
289, I believe.
Yeah, required to have a majority in parliament, and they didn't quite get that. They got more than the Conservative Party, but not enough. So now they have what's called a hung parliament, which is basically like they can't get anything done because there's not enough people to override others. So Macron is now panicking again, and he's gonna have to appoint some nonpartisan leaders to proceed in operational functions just to keep the country running.
Well, this was quite a big gamble for him in the sense that he's currently got, as of June 20th, I'm reading this Bloomberg article, his approval rating fell 6 points and is at a historic low, according to a survey by BVA Excite that showed 26% of people interviewed say they have a good opinion of Macron. So really, three-fourths of his country, before this all sort of went down, didn't care for him, and now they're looking at this. They're looking at riots in their country. I don't see how this pays off for him.
No, I mean, and just to give you an idea, I want to read through the list. This is the list of parties that make up the far-left National Front, okay? I'm going to read the party and their ideology. So you have La France Insoumise, or I don't know how to say that. I don't speak French, but their ideology is democratic socialism, left-wing populism, right? The next one, democratic socialism, left-wing populism, eco-socialism, left-wing populism and nationalism, veganism, Marxism for the Independent Workers' Party, democratic socialism, independentism, eco-socialism from the eco-socialist left. I mean, dude, it goes on and on. Globalization, green politics, socialism, eco-socialism. How about the Socialist Democracy Party, socialism pro-Europeanism, post-Marxism, communism. I mean, France is in trouble. France is already burning. I mean, radical Islamist have taken much of France, which is why this trend, and this is happening around Europe, but it's the worst in France. And you have to understand that extremism within Islamic beliefs, their goal is to convert the entire country to Islam, and not in a way that says like, "Hi, I'm here to tell you, you know, that Jesus loves you." It's you submit to this or you die. And that's another discussion for another time. But these are the radicals that are moving throughout Europe. And the fact that Macron handed his party over to a combination of Marxist, communist, socialist mixed with extreme Islamic jihadist, that is insane. And you know that those groups, like we just talked about a second ago, their end goal is the destruction of the West and capitalism. That's what they want. And it is absolutely foolish to not realize that this goes deeper than politics. There's a spiritual goal there in that in order to accomplish the removal of Western civilization, our enemies have long acknowledged you have to get rid of the God of the Bible. They know that Christian Judaic values are behind Western civilization. That's why they attack it all the time. We're the ones that refuse to admit that. It's the churches in America that are like, I don't want to be political. I don't want to take a stand. I don't want to stand for righteousness. I don't want to speak truth. I want everybody to love me. You know, as we heard Chuck Smith in the message today talked about in Micah chapter 5, how we should hate evil. Amos chapter 5. We should hate evil. And the church has lost that. They've bought into the world's definition of love, which is to love someone, you have to let them do whatever they want and acquiesce and placate and, let's just be friendly with sin. Let's flirt with sin and evil. I'm telling you, you play with fire and you get burned. That's what's happening in France right now. It's really sad. So Marine Le Pen, the leader of the Conservative Party, is still claiming a victory, even though they didn't take the majority in Parliament. Because her party claimed the most French individual votes per citizen, over 10 million citizens voting in her favor. That is more than any of the other parties. So the NR has now taken more seats than ever before in the party's history, a trend which seems to confirm Macron's fear that common sense is beginning to override the polluted left-wing nonsense that leads to the consolidation of power at the expense of taxpayers. I would just end this section in saying, look, France has always been an example to us and to the world, whether good or bad. And this is a good lesson for America right here, that if we don't get things under control, this is where we're heading. You see it in D.C. now. You see it with the Squad. You see it with Ilhan Omar and Ocasio-Cortez and Rashida Tlaib, this sort of lunacy, this radical, violent hatred towards Western values. And this is where you're heading if you don't get it under control. So we should take some notes and, reassess our condition here. So the aftermath of it was quite interesting. You know, I opened the segment talking about you can just Google and see images of burning and everything. These far left communists and jihadist sympathizers, when they won, or at least, you know, their parliamentary victory, they took to the streets to, quote, celebrate, right? Kind of like how BLM celebrated around America. BLM
does.
In typical left-wing fashion, they burned French cities, vandalized monuments, attacked police officers during fervent left-wing riots throughout the country.
Yeah, that's when they win. Can you imagine when they lose?
Jeez. Imagine when they lose. Well, I don't think we'll have to imagine because we're about to see it this fall. Be very interesting. So pray for your country. I like Pastor Jack Hibbs up at Calvary Chapel Chino Hills has been doing a pray for your country every day. If you tune into his socials, he gets on every day and this month and prays for the United States and in different areas. It's been really neat to watch. I would encourage you to join on that. You don't have to look up anything. You can just spend time alone with Jesus and pray for your country. Okay, so we're going to close the section here. Let's jump out of France and back to a domestic issue since we're on the topic of praying for our country. And we'll end today's segment with this. Let's come back to what happened this week at the RNC. That is the Republican National Convention. If you recall, or you may have heard on our podcast, we were involved with a platform fight here in the state of California regarding the California Republican Party's platform. There were groups within the party that wanted to changed the definition in the platform as far as our stance on marriage between a man and a woman and abortion, and basically back off our stance on abortion, change the language, make it more palatable, they said, for people who don't believe in anything, I guess. Of course, we fought that. We fought really hard, and we eventually came to victory here in California after many people, including pastors and others, lobbied and wrote letters and communicated with Sacramento and basically told the party, like, you're out of your mind. If you abandon your base and you turn your back on what we believe, like, a lot of us are going to walk. And so we managed to stave off the platform changes for the time being. Now, a year later, the same group of individuals, as far as I understand, has accomplished this at the national level, at the RNC, and at least in the platform committee, they got what they wanted, and they changed the language. They backed off of saying that marriage was between a man and a woman, and they did the same with abortion. Instead of our fervent defense of the unborn and life and sanctity of life, they've now backed off to, well, it's, you know, it's okay sometimes. Now, you have to understand, again, like all things, take a step back and understand where all of this is coming from. For a long time, Brandon, you can attest to this, especially in the consultant class, there's this belief that we have to compromise in order to win anything. It's a foolish belief. It's nonsensical. There's no data to back it up. It doesn't make any sense. In fact, the exact opposite has been true. The more that conservative candidates compromise on what they believe, the more we lose, it seems. There's this sort of weird fantasy belief that there's all these like undecided people sitting around who hate Republicans because of abortion and marriage issues, and that all of a sudden if you wishy-washy or you compromise on what you say, if you just say, well, I don't really believe in anything, or it doesn't matter, all of a sudden they're going to vote for you. It's a strange belief, because reality seems to say otherwise. The big problem, like in blue states like California, is what they themselves have had to focus on now, is get out the vote, because people just don't show up to vote because they're sick of politicians and they're sick of wishy-washy compromisers. What we've seen is actually when you take a stand for what you believe and you stick to it, more people will come out and vote for you. So anyways, this goes all the way to the RNC. They managed to pass it. Here's why it matters so much to us. The core family, specifically, and the sanctity of life are essential and foundational elements of the American Constitutional Republic. It is our belief in those things, as the founders clarified over and over again, that there's this thing called natural law, right? Rights endowed to us by a creator. They did not believe that the government invented laws or rights, that God did, and the government was there to protect those rights. So you can begin at what is a faith issue, but as we often say, what God tells us has practical applications in real life. It's good for you. Look at the core family, for example. Psychologists the world over agree that children need a mother and a father. They benefit psychologically from both. It's very important. You don't need to be a doctor or a scientist to see that. We can all attest to the fact that broken homes and broken families have real consequences in life. Brandon, you could talk about that all day. And in America, we've always understood that strong families make strong people, and strong people make strong citizens. Strong citizens serve their country, defend their country. We continue on and teach American values to the next generation, et cetera, et cetera. Historically speaking, if you look at every, call it, empire that has come and gone, that has fallen, you will see at the core of that fall is the disintegration of the core family and morals in general. So when we talk about these platform issues, what we're talking about is the defense of Western civilization and the American Republic. What I guess this consultant class or those within the party who seem to ask repeatedly, why does it matter? What they're really saying is, I have no idea what America's about. I don't understand why these values are foundational to us. And what I like to challenge them with is say, you know, when you ask, if you're going to ask me why it matters, I like to throw it back at them and say, why does it matter to our enemies, right? I want all of the Republican Party to pause for a minute and ask themselves, why have the leftists focused on these core culture war issues like abortion and marriage, why do they focus and attack it constantly over the last 50, 60 years? Even before, why did Stalin have such a problem with the morality and faith and family of America? Why did he know that if you could take down those things, you could take down America? That's what I want the Republican Party to ask themselves. And nobody seems to have an answer because they've abandoned their first beliefs. And now they're just, as we say, running on the fumes of these Christian Judaic values of the past. Why does it matter? Well, Hannah Arendt, I'm going to mess up her last name, Arendt, she has a great quote on this. She said this: "The aim of totalitarian education has never been to instill convictions, but to destroy the capacity to form any." That's what it's really about. There are real-world political implications in the culture war. The left wants to take control over definitions of love, marriage, abortion, etc., and they want to teach your kids, and they don't want parents involved in it, as we've seen in California. The complete domination of parental rights by the Democrats. And the goal is not about their convictions. It's that they don't want you forming any convictions. And I would remind the RNC that we are the party of convictions. We're supposed to stand up for things that we believe in because they're true, not because they're popular or because they get us elected, because it's the right thing to do. And it seems the RNC has forgotten that for the time. So we're working to fight against that, and I'm sure we'll have more on that later. For the church, you may be asking yourself as a pastor or as a church leader, well, where do I fit into this? Well, you do, first of all. And I would remind you, I was having a conversation with Pastor Jack Hibbs earlier this week, and he gave me this verse, which I thought was really appropriate. And Jeremiah 29:7 says this, that you are to seek the welfare of the city where I have sent you into exile and pray to the Lord on its behalf, for in its welfare you will find your welfare. Powerful words from the Lord there, and that you are to seek the welfare of the city and those in your community, those that you live with. You can love them in real life, not just in word, but in deed, by seeking their welfare. And then God says, you know why? Because it turns out that if the city goes well, it goes well for you too, because you live there. So this longtime disease of apathy that's infected the church has actually flipped now from apathy to full-on endorsing, as we've seen recently, where this woke ideology has crept into churches and they're now apologizing or legitimizing the language of the God-hating left. And that is an infectious problem. We're not changing anything, but we stand firm on the Word of God, which is the same yesterday, today, and forever. We hate evil. We love our fellow man as Christ has loved us. And probably worth saying again, seek the welfare of the city that you're in and pray for it, because in its welfare, you will find your welfare. Closing thoughts?
No, I think, obviously you covered the spiritual aspect, which was great. Even politically, it doesn't really make sense. Abortion is sort of the one issue that really could separate Trump supporters or separate Trump from his supporters, from his base.
Right. It's very divisive.
Probably any other issue, Trump's base, on taxes, foreign policy, maybe they look aside, but I think that he's really compromising the integrity of his base by going soft on this particular issue, that one being abortion. And so we're sort of in a spot where Republicans are very enthusiastic about Donald Trump and Democrats not so much about Joe Biden. So for them to do this right now doesn't make a lot of sense politically. Obviously, we know spiritually it's bad. So hopefully there's some sort of turnaround. Trump seems to flip-flop back and forth a little bit too much on abortion, depending on which room he's standing in, unfortunately. So we'll have to see where it goes from here.
I agree. I mean, at a minimum, I would like the Trump administration to listen for a second to their main constituents, their main support group. I mean, by far, conservative Christians represent the majority of those voting. So why would you stab your main group there in the back in favor of these fringe activist groups that have their own political agenda? It's very strange. Very strange indeed. But You know, we've often said if the church would stand up and speak out in places like California, for example, that alone would immediately change the condition of the state, immediately. But the unfortunate fact is most people don't. They don't talk about it, they don't get involved, and they don't show up to vote. So as things worsen politically in a country, Jeremiah chapter 29 becomes increasingly important for Christians to understand that your opportunity to love your neighbor is now in the civic realm, because you won't have that chance someday. And like we've said before, if you don't think for a second that Christians in North Korea would get involved in civics and vote for biblical values if they had the opportunity to, you are out of your mind. Or how about Christians in the first century under persecution of the Romans? You see, you don't live under the Roman Empire. You don't live in North Korea if you live in Southern California. You live in a free society where the people are king, and you have a God-given right to be involved, to vote, and to care. And the negligence, the refusal to do so is something that I believe we'll all be held accountable for to God someday. Because one day the master will return and he'll ask, what did you do with what I gave you? You can finish that story yourself. Well, thanks, guys, for listening. Stay tuned. Next week, we'll have another episode, and we'll stay on top of things. Follow us on Instagram at Defining Truth. Also, check out DefiningTruth.org. You can pick up our book, self-titled Defining Truth, which is a great toolkit to follow up and learn about how to properly address culture war issues from a biblical perspective. That's Defining Truth. It's available online. It's available on all audio platforms, including Audible, if you want to listen to it. And you can come to DefiningTruth.org and get yourself a paper copy and one for everyone else that you know. That'd be awesome in supporting us. Thank you very much, and we'll see you next time.